What up, everybody? I am the Transportation Hub, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Hub Talk Chronicles. Now, in this special episode of today, you know, normally I upload a podcast episode every Thursday, but this is a special episode. This happens to be on a Saturday because today is Saturday, August the 28th, 2021. And for those of you who don't remember, that today is the 30th anniversary of the tragic Union Square derailment that happened this morning, 30 years ago to this very date. So I want to use this podcast time to take a look back of this Union Square derailment. Now the original episode I was going to upload this past Thursday will be uploaded this upcoming Thursday, okay? And during this episode, we're gonna have a moment of silence to pay a brief tribute to the late R&B singer and actress Aaliyah. So anyways, without further ado, let's get right into this podcast episode. All right. The 1991 Union Square derailment occurred shortly after midnight on August 28, 1991. A 4 Lexington Avenue Express train on the New York City's IRT Lexington Avenue line derailed as it was about to enter 14th Street Union Square heading downtown as it was about to enter, killing 5 people. It was the worst accident on the subway since the 1928 Times Square derailment. The motorman was found at fault for intoxication and excessive speed and served time in prison for manslaughter. Now, I didn't know much about the 1928 Times Square derailment, but the only derailments that I remembered was the 1901 Marylebone Street wreck. The derailment was so damn bad that they literally had to change the name of the street out in Brooklyn. Where else? Oh. And this derailment in 1991 Union Square derailment, which we're talking about right now. And I also know about the 1995 Williamsburg Bridge accident. And also other derailments happened too. There was one back in 2014 on the F train line heading southbound near 65th Street in Woodside, Queens. That was 2014. In 2017, an R46A train derailed out in Manhattan, Upper Manhattan. And even this past year, last year in 2020, where some subway vandal threw some object onto the Uptown Express track as the A train was approaching the station at 14th Street, 8th Avenue. And the first car got derailed and also caused moderate damage to the train's structure frame on the first car. Way too crazy. Yeah. All right. The motor man assigned to operate the train, 38-year-old Robert E. Ray, reported to the Woodlawn Terminal on the 4 route to begin his 8-hour shift at 11:30 p.m. on August 27, 1991. 15 minutes late. Hear this, ladies and gentlemen. Despite visible signs that should have disqualified Ray for duty that night, including bloodshot eyes and wearing tennis shoes, the dispatcher at the Woodlawn Terminal that night, Percival Hossack, allowed Ray to go on duty and assigned him a portable radio for use. Ray took control of a 10-car R62 train by Kawasaki, along with conductor David Bieran, departing Woodlawn at 11:38 p.m., 6 minutes late. Among the passengers on board was another conductor, Steve Darden, who had just finished his shift and was riding the train back home. Almost immediately after the Woodlawn departure, Ray overran the first stop, Marshaloo Parkway, by 5 cars. Then Ray overran the next stop, Bedford Park Boulevard, Lehman College, by 1 car. In both instances, Behrend admonished Ray, but did not pull the emergency brake, which would have required a complex restarting procedure and made Ray's condition apparent, or radio the New York City Transit Authority's NYCTA's command center about Ray's operation, as required by NYCTA regulations. As Ray's operation of the train became more erratic, continuing down the line, both Behrend and the off-duty Darden warned him multiple times about his operation, but no one on board pulled the emergency brake to stop the train. So Behrend, who was the conductor to Ray's train at the time, and another off-board conductor, Warren Darden, has told this particular train operator multiple times that he was sloppy drunk, he was intoxicated, he overran certain subway stops just by a couple of cars, and no one on board even thought to pull the emergency brake or to radio in RCC at NYCTA, right? Nobody decided to call in Radio Communication Center, Rail Communication Center, right? RCC, right? Nobody bothered to call them and tell them about what this train operator is doing. The accident. During the night of August 27th through August 28th, 1991, there was a construction on the IRT Lexington Avenue line that required southbound express trains to switch to the local track. This required trains to slow down to 10 miles per hour before entering a diamond crossover to access a pocket train between the southbound local and express tracks. The pocket train had been part of the original design of that line and was intended so that the train switching between tracks would not delay local and express trains that were not going through the switch. At about 12:12 a.m. on August 28, 1991, just 44 minutes after leaving Woodlawn, 1991, I wasn't even born yet. I was born like around 96 or so, okay? So this was like, 5 years before my existence. Just 44 minutes after leaving Woodlawn, Ray's erratic operation of the train finally led to disaster as the train headed southbound with approximately 216 passengers who were going 15 miles per hour. Too fast for a trip clock to stop the train in time, derailed at the pocket track just north of the 14th Street Union Square station. 5 passengers died, mostly in the second car, almost immediately, and 161 passengers were seriously injured. Several support columns were destroyed, causing the street level above to immediately subside by 0.5 inches. It was the deadliest subway accident to happen in New York since the Times Square disaster of 1928. The first car, 1440, was struck by a steel pillar, was cut in half, and had its roof sheared off. But the motorman's cab was not damaged. The second car, 1439, was folded in half by the barrier between the express and local tracks. Car number 1437 was split in half and folded around a support beam, and cars 1436 to 1435 was also severely damaged. cars lay tangled in between the support beams. The train was damaged so badly that one emergency spotter said that he couldn't tell where one car ended and another began at some points. Ladies and gentlemen, from what I just read, this is by far the most deadliest subway accident to have ever happened in New York City subway history. Give me one second, guys. I'll be right back after these messages. Hey everybody, I hope you're all enjoying this episode. This is Norm from Hub Talk, coming to discuss to you guys that if you guys enjoy the Hub Talk Chronicles, please make sure to follow the Transportation Hub on Instagram, Twitter, like and follow the Facebook page, join the Transportation Hub Discord server. And for all the past blog post references, you can join the Hub Chronicles. You can visit the Hub Chronicles and Transportation Hub Blogspot page for all the previous blog content articles. Follow the Transportation Hub on Instagram. And please check out the Transportation Hub YouTube page and subscribe today. For information on all of those links, please visit allmylinks.com/Transportation Hub. That's allmylinks.com/the Transportation Hub. One more time. That's allmylinks.com/Transportation Hub. That's allmylinks.com/Transportation Hub. Okay, we're back. Now, because of the accident that occurred within earshot of the Transit Police command post in the Union Square subway station, well, of course, because there is a police substation just right above the platforms at Union Square subway station. By the way, Transit Police and NYPD at the time were separate entities. They didn't join forces until 1995 under future and then Mayor Rudolph Giuliani. Alright. Yes. And within the sight of two transit police officers waiting on the platform, response was rapid. The accident location was very close to the platform, which was used for triage, and field treatment took place at street level. Working conditions at the site was very cramped and hot. It took until approximately 3:30 a.m. until Darden, the off-duty conductor, was the last injured passenger extracted from the train. A total of 121 passengers and 24 emergency responders who suffered heat-related conditions or minor cuts and bruises were taken to hospitals. 16 passengers were seriously injured enough to be admitted. Debris was found as far away as 150 feet from the lead car. Ray later said that he had drunk heavily the day before his work shift because he was depressed that his ex-girlfriend would not let him see their two children. And at that time of the accident, he had fallen asleep. Well, guess what? If you were that depressed, and if you know you're going to drink and be heavy intoxicated, you should have never came to work that day. Or in this case, that night. You should have never came to work that night. Because you showed up to work, eyes shot, intoxicated, you look very blurry and slurry, and I don't know what the hell was going on in that dispatcher's mind who allowed the train operator to continue his shift. Like, when he started the train, right, he overran Marshaloo Parkway by 5 cars, and at Bedford Park Boulevard, he overshot that station by 1 car. Who does that? I don't even drink. And even I know that's wrong. I don't even drink. Because I'm not a drinker. Drinking is not my type. It's not my style, you know. I live clean. I'm a clean person. I'm not much of a drinker. I can't drink. I tried beer one time and it was gross to me. That shit was just so damn gross to me. Like, I can't handle beer. My tolerance level with beer is so low. That low. Mm-mm. Ray was not hurt in the crash. Jeez, I wonder why, but whatever. So he walked himself to the station, identified himself, and then sat on a park bench during the rescue operation. So he caused an accident, was uninjured, he identified himself, and ended up to walk out of Union Square subway station and sat at a park bench nearby. Mm-mm. During the rescue operation, the NYPD later reported that he drank 3 beers after the accident. He was later arrested at 5:30 a.m. while entering his apartment building, and when tested approximately 13 hours after the accident, his blood alcohol level was 0.21. The legal level in the state of New York was 0.10 at the time. The fact that he overshot 2 stations in the Bronx, which was Marshall Parkway by 5 cars, and then Bedford Park Boulevard, Lehman College by 1 car, and then you got Biram, who was the on-duty conductor at the time, and then you had Darden, who was off-duty at the time, okay, ask him to ask the train operator to reduce his speed and not had a break approach at 14th Street Union Square, were all brought up in the ensuing trial. And the fact he told him about this really says a lot about his character and him as a person. That he got depressed at the situation they had going on at home so much that it caused him to drink heavily, and his carelessness and his intoxicity got 5 people killed and 100 plus people injured. That's disgusting. And he went to trial for this. And later on October 15th, 1992, a jury acquitted Way of murder, but found him guilty of five counts of second degree manslaughter. And on November 6th, he was sentenced to 5 to 15 years in prison, plus terms of between 1 and 7 years for the assault on 26 of the injured passengers, all to run concurrently. He was released in April 2002, but he was actually out on parole until 2007. Okay, I'm gonna summarize this real quick for you guys, because we have an update story, and it's a comeuppance for the train operator that caused this accident. Okay. The day after the crash, the MTA announced that it will start testing blood alcohol content level for all the operators when they're going on duty. And the MTA had to pay out $5 million to $10 million to the victims of this horrible derailment. Service on RRT Lex didn't resume until 6 days after September 3rd, after completion of the site investigation, 4 days around the clock, the bleeds removed and construction work, including the Labor Day holiday. The 5 R62 subway cars destroyed in the accident, the lead car 1440 and the other cars 1439, 1438, 1436, 1437, and 1439 were all scrapped. In addition, the 2 support columns, 2 set of tracks, tracks, a third rail, two signal sets, two switches, and air compressor room had been destroyed. The switches and tracks were rebuilt with the NYCTA removing the pocket train on which the train had derailed and replacing it with a simple diamond crossover. In addition, the NYCTA added diversion grade time signals to force trains to slow down earlier before crossing tracks. Reporters at the New York Newsday won the 1992 Pulitzer Prize for spot news reporting for the coverage of the accident. A 1992 study commissioned after the accident by the NYCTA found some signals in the subway system, including Lexington Avenue line, were spaced too closely for trains to travel at a maximum speed to have stop on time, confirming the safety investigators. Immediately after the crash, the issue surfaced after a rear-end collision on the Williamsburg Bridge in 1995. Ultimately, the accident led to the phasing in of communications-based train control and automated trains in the New York City subway systems in the 21st century. Because in the 21st century, of course, after the successful testing of the R110A and the R110B in the 90s, later on in the 21st century, we had a slew of brand new NTT subway cars roaming the subway system. Of course, we had the R142s, we had the R142As, and then came the R160s, and then later on came the R188s, then the R179s came into the picture, and now we're in the process of getting the delivery orders for the R211s. Yes, the National Transportation Safety Board, aka the NTSB, recommended that speed indication systems to be installed on subway cars. The NYCTA have been testing speed indication systems since the 90s. I remember like a few years back, they were doing speed testing indications with the R142As in the A division. But anyways, moving on. And by May 1994, gear type speed indication systems were installed on the R44s and R46s, and ring type speed indication systems were purchased for installation on 40% of the R62As. In May of 1994, a 203,064 bid was awarded for the procurement of the 132 Doppler radar type speed indication systems for the R62s. The type of the train damaged in the accident. Yeah, the damage to the train was so horrible. First responders couldn't tell from the way how that train got caught by the beam railing and got stuck in between the beam railing and the walls on the side. They couldn't tell where the car from the end caught from where the beginning of the next car got caught, because it was so conjoined together because of the way how this train operator was traveling in the speed rate when he was switching from the express track to the local track. Instead of going 10 miles per hour, he was going 3, 4, 5 times the speed rate that he was supposed to be going. He was supposed to do 10 miles, no more, no less. And the fact that Biren, the conductor who was on duty at the time, and Darden, who was off duty at the time, told Ray that he was speeding too fast, he overshot the stations, and they told him to slow down his speed and utilize the brakes. Like, they could have stopped they could have stopped the train. Like, they could have stopped the train, all right? They could have stopped the train by pulling the emergency brake, or they could have notified NYCTA on the radio and report this train operator for driving while intoxicated. He would have gotten summonses, he would have gone home, and he would have gotten suspended while on the job. And as a result, nobody would have to lose their lives over such a senseless tragedy that could have easily been well avoided. Now, I have a story for you guys, okay, that happened back in 2015, and it just happens to include this train operator, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be right back to get to fetch that story in a brief moment. Okay guys, I'm back. And you will never believe what I just found. Now, I was scrolling through the search section, and come to find out that nearly 14 years later to the date where he caused the infamous 1991 Union Square derailment, he found himself in deep trouble a few years back in 2015. Now, I'm going to read you guys an article real quick from NBC4 New York, which was published on June 5th, 2015. And I'm going to give you guys my synopsis on the whole thing. Okay? Hear this. It was really karma. Hit and run accident stirs memories of the deadly New York City subway crash. Far removed from an era when New Yorkers knew him as the drunken motorman in a nightmarish subway crash, Robert Ray once again found himself in a miserable situation. This time, Ray was the victim. Instead of him being the intoxicated suspect that he was back in 1991, in 2015, he is a victim of a hit-and-run accident. Alright? The accident last week left the 62-year-old Ray with a skull fracture and a broken leg, and also stored memories of his notorious past. "I was shocked," says Ray's former defense attorney, Michael Parson. "Of course there's tremendous irony, particularly if alcohol was involved." Parson said he lost touch with Ray years ago. Attempts by the Associated Press to reach Ray remains hospitalized, and members of his family were unsuccessful. Until last week, Ray had faded into obscurity as an ex-con with a homeless shelter, his last known address. By comparison, his life driving a subway train in 1991 was a culmination of what his family describes his lifelong dream. But then there were signs of trouble. Subway officials had cited him for skipping work, sleeping on the job, and running a signal. Ray, then 38, was late for work again on August 28th before entering the cab of the Lexington Avenue No. 4 Express. He later told police that he had been drinking whiskey and kept drifting off as he drove the train. Shortly after midnight, the train jumped the tracks and plowed into the walls and support columns near Union Square, splitting one car in half. 5 people were killed and more than 200 people were injured in the worst subway disaster in 63 years. Jonathan Piscitti and 2 other paramedics were among the first to arrive. The carnage and tunnel wreckage, he recalled, was both surreal and overwhelming. "There were 3 of us and 100 patients, says Facility, now a fire department commander, from dead to critical to walking wounded. While rescuers labored, Ray exited the subway and sat on a bench in Union Square Park and drank malt liquor. Tests put later out his blood alcohol level at 0.21%, more than twice the legal limit. Ray was arrested and charged with murder. A jury found him guilty of only manslaughter, but the trial made him a tabloid villain. He was like a deer in headlights, Parsons said. I don't think he understood the full impact of what's going on. It was too much for him. At sentencing, Ray told the judge, "My heart bleeds very deeply for those families, victimized by a work of God." The judge shot back, "It was not God that caused it. It was you," and gave him 5 to 10 years in prison. Records show that Ray was released from prison from 2002 to 2007 until and was on parole until 2007. He turned up on the night of May 28th in the Bronx, where he was hit by a sedan that kept going. The driver turned himself in the next day and was charged with leaving the scene of an accident. The accident was captured on security tape obtained by WABC TV, showing Ray walking out into the middle of the block against a light, pausing on a divider and stepping directly into traffic. Police says that there is no way if the hit and run driver had been drinking, but asked by WABC for a star, see how it turned out that way. Keith Pascal, whose mother was killed in the subway crash, responded, "Karma. I say it was really karma." And when it comes to Ray, that concept is still interesting, Pacilli says, if you believe in that sort of thing. Ay, ay, ay. You see what happens? In the past, back in 1991, you caused a subway accident, and then 14-ish years later, you become a victim of a hit-and-run accident by an intoxicated drunk driver. You see how things work? But anyways, you guys, I hope you find this story very very interesting and informative. It's just a reminder of our dark past in our transit system. One that we hope that will never happen ever again. But chances of that are less slightly happening because we now are installing CBTC, also known as Communications Basic Controls, okay? It's already been installed on the L line. It's already been installed on the 7 line. Queens Boulevard is getting theirs. The Culver line is getting theirs. Yeah, 8th Avenue just started the groundwork. It'll get theirs soon. Crosstown will get theirs. And Lexington Avenue line will get theirs. And all the other subway lines following them will get theirs as well. Alright, and ladies and gentlemen, I just want to take this time to pay a moment of silence for the fallen, for the late R&B singer and actress Aaliyah. Thank you. Now guys, if you don't remember who Aaliyah is, she was a famous R&B singer and an amazing actress. She passed away in a plane crash out in the Bahamas back on August 25th, 2001. August 25th has passed, and it's been 20 years since her passing, since her tragic death and passing. Now, Aaliyah will always be in our minds and forever in our hearts because because her music and her movies are now available for streaming. If you look up her music and watch her on YouTube, hey, more power to you, and just honor those who lost their lives in this plane crash as well, and also honor the five people who have lost their lives in this horrible, horrific, tragic, disgusting subway derailment that could have been avoided. Okay, at that Woodlawn terminal, that train operator should have been sent home. When he overshot two of the train stations out in the Bronx, Marshall Loop Parkway by five cars and Bedford Park Boulevard, Lehman College by one car, the emergency lever should have been pulled, and we should have, and the two conductors, one Bierman and Durden, should have called police, should have radioed NYCTA. Okay, you guys, I hope you enjoyed this wonderful episode of the Hub Talk Chronicles. Make sure that you subscribe to the Transportation Hub on YouTube. Make sure you follow the Transportation Hub on Instagram, Twitter, like and follow the Facebook page, and make sure to join the Transportation Hub on Discord. Transportation Hub on Discord, and make sure that you listen and subscribe to the Hub Talk Chronicles on both Anchor and Spotify. And also, you guys, I'm also planning to expand the Hub Talk Chronicles podcast across all podcast platforms. So if you have any podcast platforms in mind where you like to hear the Hub Talk on, just let me know. Well, once again, this is the Transportation Hub with the Hub Talk Chronicles, and I can't wait to see all of you at the next stop.